Hey everybody, thanks for having me. Patrick Steck. I'm the Vice President of External Affairs at Deans for Impact. Deans for Impact is a national nonprofit that is actually based in Austin, Texas, that is working to ensure every child in our nation is taught by a well-prepared teacher.
Hi, everybody. My name is Jeff Carlisle. I'm the policy manager here at Deans for Impact. My role is to connect policy, practice, and research to try and make pathways into teaching more accessible, instructionally focused.
This is All Things Education, a podcast where three-decade teachers discuss what they know.
The good, the not so good, and the continuous opportunity for high-quality education in Texas.
Join us for a smart conversation as we dig deep into the issues that affect us all in and around our great state.
And here are those three neat instructors now.
Welcome back to our ongoing chat about all things education. I'm Natalie, an educator in transition still, joined by my esteemed co-hosts.
Lance Farish, a high school math teacher in the great Metroplex of Dallas-Fort Worth.
Matthew Balter, a electives teacher in Austin, Texas.
Well, first off, I want to take a moment to acknowledge the heaviness we might all be feeling to some degree currently. At the time we're recording this, it's been just about a week since the devastating floods that have impacted Texas across the state. The physical destruction and loss of life in the Hill Country especially hits close to home, as I've been fortunate to spend a good amount of time in the Hunt area on the river with friends over the last several years, some of whom live and work there. At a special place that's been in their family for a very long time. Thankfully, the people I know who were out there the morning of July 4th survived the flash floods and were evacuated safely after it was finally safe for them to do so. But we know there are so many others who were not as fortunate, including many children attending summer camps out in those riverside communities. As a parent and as an educator, that aspect feels especially tragic. So I just want to make sure that people know we're holding those families in our hearts.
Absolutely. Thanks for those comments. And especially as this episode is getting out into the world, we'll be in back to school season. And I know that these tragic events are going to affect so many families in Texas as we move into that era of the year. And so we'll be definitely keeping them in our thoughts.
Well, somehow we've already surpassed the halfway-ish mark of summer break, if you can believe that. In fact, when this publishes, we'll probably all be dusting ourselves off and gearing up to get back in the classroom. Some of my days have been filled with tasks around my house, some hangouts with friends and family here and there. And of course, I'm staying active, which is still the plan for the rest of my summer, whatever's left of it, another couple of weeks. What have you guys been up to? Anything planned for the rest of your time off?
Yeah, I just got back late last night from a vacation up in Bar Harbor, Maine. That was really awesome. I got to spend some time with my family in beautiful New England. I hadn't been to Bar Harbor in, I've got maybe like 20, 25 years, and it's a very, very special place. Before that, I got to do a backpacking trip out in Kings Canyon National Park in California. That was an epic adventure with some friends.
Wow.
Really gorgeous, challenging hikes each day, but absolutely spectacular scenery and adventure. So it's been a really fun summer. Now that we're coming to the second half, I'm gonna be buckling down and oh man, I can't believe I'm saying it, but already starting to think about the next school year and getting prepped for that.
I feel a little embarrassed next to y'all active stalwarts over here because I've been in a constant state of my diet starts tomorrow all summer. in fact, my diet starts today. That being said, it is early in the morning, so we'll see how that goes. So I've been kicking it. A little bit of preparation for the next school year. Dallas has sent me to a few trainings locally, professional developments. And also, like Matthew said, wow, mid-July already, late July, it's going to be time to start looking at those lesson plans and those calendars, and also a few of the back-to-school activities that we're going to be doing with these ninth graders here in, hard to say, less than a month.
I know, it's crazy. It would probably be safe to wager that there's probably some mixed emotions among the teacher workforce about the start of the new school year being just around the corner. Some might groan at the sight of school supplies being stocked at the front of the local grocery store. I was just at HEB yesterday and saw
Oh no,
some strong,
the
yeah,
bag
some
pack.
strong reactions as I passed that area of the store, which always makes me laugh. But you know, there are many educators who've spent their summer planning and working in anticipation of greeting their new students come August. A special shout out to some of those teachers who will just be starting their career in the classroom for the very first time. What do you guys recall about that little period just before your classroom instruction debut as new teachers? You got hired, you made it through the interview process, and now it's right before you. Do you even remember what was going on in your mind or in your heart at the time?
Definitely. Not only the interviews and the process to get hired, but also the process to figure out how to do it, because I was an alt cert kid. And I do say kid because it was the summer I was 21 that I was going through,
Oh wow, little baby.
going through classes, or the summer institute where they then place you into a classroom in the following semester in 2009. So y'all can do the math there. Entering into my 17th year now, I remember trepidation, nervousness. How am I going to remember all of the if then things to do for student behavior and lesson sequencing and all of those things? And then you just kind of put your feet on the ground and you figure it out. And of course, that wasn't my best year of teaching. It inherently isn't for just about anybody, which is why we like to see teachers stick around for longer than just that 1 year. But it was so formative and it will stick with me for the rest of my life and kind of convinced me that this was the right path. How about you, Matthew?
Oh, yours sounds smoother than mine. I was so unprepared. This was back in 2010. I don't know if you remember this, but there's a huge hiring freeze, at least in AISD, but I think across the state in
Yeah, I was everywhere.
2010. Getting a teaching job was really tough. And so the whole sort of like application interview process seemed to take forever and was full of, anxiety and disappointment and this, that, and the other thing. I had moved down to Austin from Boston. I had absolutely no money and was very, very desperate for a job, but fortunately got one. And then when I started, I really quickly realized that, I had no real training to be a teacher. I went through an alternative certification program, which we'll talk about in a little bit later. But yeah, it was really, really messy. It was a really tough school. There was not a whole lot of support, and I was teaching English as a second language to recent immigrants who didn't really speak any English, and I didn't speak any Spanish, and so we did a lot of learning together, and it was a fun year in some ways, but it was really, really stressful and challenging in others.
From Boston to Austin. That's going to be your memoir title,
That's
From
good. Yeah,
Boston to Austin.
exactly.
I love it. Yeah, I do remember that hiring freeze in 2010, and it was statewide because that was when I completed my alt cert and was ready to and qualified, by their standards to apply for jobs, actual classroom instructor jobs. And I remember being a little bit nervous. I actually didn't find a job that 2010 year.
Oh.
I didn't come back around to it until 2014 because there just were not, at least in San Antonio, there was nothing available at that time of the freeze. But fast forward to 2014, and I remember being a little bit nervous, but excited to roll up my sleeves and dive in. At that time, I was joining a well-established team of veteran teachers who I trusted would show me the ways that I didn't already come equipped with. Shout out to Judson High School English Department. They were a great support in those very early years. And whether you did, alternative certification or traditional certification, for some of our listeners, teacher candidates in both programs do receive some sort of fundamental training in things like instructional strategies, learning profiles, and even some classroom management. But in both cases, whatever form or fashion you might have been certified, it's safe to say that nothing fully prepares you for being in the classroom more than actually being in the classroom. So what do we do with that, right? Do we throw teachers who've never been in and sink or swim, which unfortunately, in response to the need for teachers after the COVID pandemic, kind of opened the pathway for uncertified teachers with other professional experience to enter the classroom and train almost exclusively on the job. But at the end of the day, even those traditionally and alternative certification pathways lack when it comes to how much time is spent, hands on deck, boots on the ground, however you like to say it. But that teacher training ultimately has evolved, like everything else over the years. And it's been a key component to much of our advocacy over the last several years, during which we've seen some big legislative and regulatory changes around teacher training in recent sessions, especially. For today's episode, Matt and I got to chat with Jeff Carlisle and Patrick Steck from Deans for Impact about this very topic.
I kind of like to think of pathways into teaching in Texas sometimes a little bit like the Wild West. There are many different pathways into teaching with lots of different characteristics and qualities, but also a little bit of excitement, kind of like the old cowboy times. Is we're coming out of a few years of some pretty steep challenges in the teacher workforce. Some recent polling from Raise Your Hand Texas has found that over 80% of teachers are considering leaving the profession. We've got 56% of new teachers hired this school year were uncertified. And the governor during the last legislative session created a task force for dealing with the teacher vacancy crisis. So we kind of have this confluence of a lot of different factors coming together that the Texas legislature has sought to address, not only just during this legislative session, but during previous years as well. Specifically during this section, the biggest piece of legislation that they enacted was something called HB2. And within there, it addresses a lot of things, everything from like teacher compensation to early childhood education. There's one section that deals specifically with teacher prep. And in there, they have a lot of incentive funding to try and get more folks to go through high quality preparation pathways. And also funding supports for things like educator preparation programs, mentorship, and also ending or ultimately of the ability for districts to hire uncertified teachers.
I will say that, like, as it relates to pathways into teaching, it's very similar conversation happening all across the country, and that there are a lot of ways that someone can opt into how they become a teacher. But what is true across all of those options, what's not always true across all of those options is a firm commitment to the quality of training that they're actually going to receive. And I think that is true in Texas as well as Illinois or New York or California or Nebraska. We see states and communities everywhere grappling with a multitude of pathways to the profession, which we believe is like necessary to meet the individual needs of those who aspire to teach, but not a consistent commitment to like really high quality experiences for our teachers in training. And so what's true in Texas in this case is also true for our country as a whole as we think about an effective teacher workforce.
So that's just a sample from a really great conversation we had with Jeff, who also happens to be Teach Plus alumni from the inaugural fellowship. Shout out, Jeff. And Patrick, who lends some additional insight to teacher preparation, not just with what's happening in Texas, but also what's happening nationwide. My first question of them was, who decides what makes a teacher prep program high quality? Take a listen to their response.
We have decades and decades of research around how students learn and what it takes for individual teachers to support their to support student learning. And to put it plainly, like, what are the actions you have to take as a teacher to get a student to go from point A in their thinking to point B? And at DFI, we like to point to that, like, decades-long research base and referred to it as the science of learning, which is a broad set of research around how students think and the role that teachers can play in activating that thinking. And so whenever folks are like, what should be the minimum thing that all teachers should be able to do on day one, we often go back to the research base and specifically cognitive science research and say, this is what it takes to get to activate the brain for learning, and this is what we want teachers to be able to know and do once they get in the classroom. And so for us, it starts and ends with like, what does the evidence say about what works for kids? And then as it matriculates into like the bureaucratic cycles of like, we have to layer on and ensure quality assurance of training experiences and set competencies for our teachers. Like how our country is set up is like, that is left up to the states. There are very few and even less nowadays, markers of quality set at the federal level. So much of that is set left to states to determine. And so I actually think Texas has a really amazing framework, a new framework kind of like set up to kind of like set the ground floor for what quality should look like across preparation pathways into teaching. And maybe Jeff can jump in and share more about that framework in Texas.
Thinking about here is like when we think about preparation, we also know that it makes a huge difference for students. You know, uncertified teachers can actually lead to learning loss. Whereas, like a recent evaluation of one program in Texas found that like it can actually higher quality teacher preparation can lead to gains over time, not just the standard 1 year of learning at a time. When we look at what Texas is doing to point towards quality, you know, for example, in HB2, they've created different amounts of funding to support different types of pathway, but it's a tiered system, kind of pointing towards what Texas is like valuing, with a residency certification kind of receiving the most amount of funding tied to there. And so part of how they're pointing towards quality is if you want to be able to access some of that funding, those teachers need to have at least a full year in the classroom practicing. And then, you know, there's some different components to some of the other pathways. Patrick mentioned the effective preparation framework, and that is a new set of like standards for educator preparation programs that, you know, has been partnered together by TEA and the State Board of Education, Educator Certification, really united around a bunch of pillars for what they want to be true of all teachers. And the really awesome thing about this is that you can apply these standards to any type of program. Maybe it's an apprenticeship program, maybe it's an alternative certification pathway, maybe it's a university-based traditional preparation program. And so instead of saying, like, this is what needs to be true in each pathway, it's saying this should be true across all pathways.
So somewhere in there, somebody mentioned science of learning, and I love that reference. I think that's something that a lot of people outside of the profession may not really understand about the nature of the job, that teaching is truly an art, a craft, and a science. How important is it, in y'all's opinion, that the preparation for teachers through any pathway, whether it's traditional, alternative, or on-the-job training, how important is it for those pathways to be streamlined? And do you agree that it should be left to the states to determine and implement standards versus there being a nationwide mandate or a national mandate?
I mean, that latter part is a humongous question, and there's a lot of factors outside of just what we might here in this room think is best for teaching instruction, you know, certain political factors that we're not necessarily getting into today. But as far as the first half is concerned, absolutely. If we can collect data, which we have tons of, and we can do research and we can figure out, we can get to the essence of what makes good teaching to the point where we can mold our new teachers to follow those steps, why wouldn't we streamline that so that we have a product that's good across the board, like we see in other industries, as was mentioned by the interview guests? Matthew, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree 100% in terms of streamlining the programs. I think that it's really, really important when we're talking about teacher prep and the science of learning that everything we use is based on research, right? For way, way, way too long in this country and in this state, we were teaching this method of reading, of literacy, that was based on very little to no research, and that turned out to be a disaster. And so I think we have to be really careful about that. As far as state versus national mandate, I definitely think that this should be an issue up to the states to determine. I'm very, very skeptical of any sort of like national mandate for education training programs. This country is just way too diverse. There's way too large of a population to do that. And by having it be determined by the states creates competition, which I think is good. But that's my opinion.
Which lends itself to a whole other conversation about how do we then ensure that there's equitable educational opportunity across the country, right? But I agree with you. I don't think that that comes in the form of a national mandate around it. Maybe there's some way to implement like a calibration of sorts where state leaders can come together and kind of swap notes and things like that. I don't know. Either way, I mean, there's to me an obvious merit to emphasizing and ensuring that teachers are well prepared to educate students. Remember that this primary and secondary schooling experience that they have is the foundation for any other career, trade, or skill development. There has for some time been an air of attitude toward teaching, I think, as glorified babysitting, but really, how confident are you in the surgeon who you believe was just babysat grades K through 12? Let's effectively remove that mindset altogether in recognition that the quality of teacher prep has far-reaching implications. It really does matter. Of course, anytime we identify the need for something, the next logical question is, how are we going to do it? And maybe most importantly for stakeholders in education and in policy, how are we going to pay for it? In this last 89th session, we saw major school funding through House Bill 2, which we discussed a bit in our last episode. And Patrick and Jeff drew our attention to Article 2 of that House Bill 2, which addresses a couple of provisions specific to teacher preparation.
The first is something called the prep allotment, which is essentially a formula that incentivizes aspiring teachers to go through a preparation program rather than enter the classroom unprepared or undercertified. This offers anywhere from $8,000 to $24,000 per candidate flowing through the district, depending on which pathway they go into. They might be going to a grow your own, an alternative certification pathway, traditional, or residency, and each of those has their own funding amount. That funding can be used for things like stipends for candidates, living stipends, mentorship to support them in their first 2 years of teaching, and then also funding to go towards the educator preparation program to support high quality materials for their learning or supervision during their student teaching experiences. There's another aspect in there that I mentioned earlier, where it is closing out the ability for districts to hire uncertified teachers. In Texas, we have this policy called the Districts of Innovation Policy, which essentially grants a traditional school district the same flexibilities that a charter school would in hiring. And so one of those is the ability to hire an uncertified teacher. I think the intention behind that, when you think about innovation, is like, what if there's someone who's a marine biologist? And I could have the opportunity to hire them as a high school biology teacher. How amazing would that be? The unfortunate thing is that's not how that policy bears out in practice. And so to rectify this situation, the legislature is closing out the ability for districts to hire uncertified individuals. But they've created a number of flexibilities within there. So allowing a district to create a plan for how they're going to get to that point rather than just saying, you can't have uncertified teachers next year, and then artificially creating another vacancy crisis. And within there, they've also created an opportunity, if you're an uncertified teacher, to receive a one-time payment of $1,000 if you do earn your certification. And so, like, there's a number of intersecting supports all here pointing in the direction of let's make sure that teachers are well prepared before they enter the classroom.
And the thing that I would like pull up from like the details of Article 2 that I think is like really compelling in terms of like broader shifts we're seeing across the country as it relates to how we train teachers in this country is this notion that for a long time, districts have been like kind of our school communities and hiring and talent staff in districts have often been like passive receivers of talent and just like getting whatever they get from the preparation providers in their like immediate geography. And this like kind of flips the paradigm on its head and actually allows districts to take more control and play a more active role in like saying, these are the types of candidates we're looking for. These are the types of training experiences we expect our teachers to have. And actually like puts the employer, which in this case is the school district, in the driver's seat around what preparation they're willing to invest in order to like attract talent to their campus. And so I just want to like name that like what Texas is doing here is like a broader movement we're seeing across this country, which is like having districts kind of step into the driver's seat as it relates to talent preparation and saying and setting expectations for preparation providers around this is what we want our talent to be capable of doing, and these are the experiences we think are going to lead to them to be able to do that once they get to our district.
So, in the previous interim, meaning in between the 88th and the 89th legislative sessions, we saw TEA, Texas Education Agency, adopt a residency model, which Patrick and Jeff are speaking about, to up the ante, so to speak, in teacher prep programs. And now their state policy and funding following suit through this Article 2 of House Bill 2. There's a lot of financial incentive for prospective teacher candidates, the likes of which we've never seen. And it sounds like more than ever has been allocated to teacher prep, than we've seen in the past at all, at least with this sort of dedicated and specific intentional approach. Districts will have a leading role in collaborating with those prep programs to redesign some of the professional learning structures and strategies that they think will be most valuable to enhancing the workforce, like Patrick was saying. But my question for y'all is, how do you think this funding for a residency stipend will significantly change the recruitment and retention of teacher candidates? And also, what are the implications here for district leaders, positive or negative? Even though we're saying they have a role in, defining or designating the type of candidate they need, what else might be at play there that you guys anticipate or suspect?
Yeah, well, first off, I think Article 2 is a huge win for teachers, for students, for public education as a whole. I think that this is a really, really positive step in general. Unlike a lot of other professions today, where you see so much, transitioning and moving around from job to job. I mean, most sort of like millennials are staying in jobs for 2 years and then they're moving on to something else. With teaching, it is different. What we really need are teachers who stay in the classroom past those 2, 3 years, because that has a huge impact on the overall quality of the student's education. And so any step to pre better prepare teachers so that they stay in the classroom is a positive step. I also think just the idea of going through a certification program, becoming a certified teacher, if you're taking those steps, if you're going through the application program, process. If you're going through the 2-year program, that shows a serious level of commitment. They're not serious. And I really think that it's up to district leaders to make sure that these programs, that this funding is going toward a good place and that it's actually effective.
Yeah, I agree with almost all of that. And let's kind of really hone in on the financial implications here, which was in the question, which is, and this might be reductive, but I think basically all of our audience can relate to this. if there is a financial incentive to get me into the classroom, we like that word stipend, right? It means that I'm going to get paid. Then there's going to be more candidates, right? And it's as simple as that. We've seen this in a lot of research, dating back to the Teacher Vacancy Task Force and a lot of other places, that the thing that really is going to get more teachers, not just trained in these programs, but attracted to them in the first place, is the idea that there is a financial incentive for me to do so, when I have all of these other options available to me in the workforce in 2025. So that's kind of, I think, positive. And then, as Matthew said, bringing it back to the students and the families was a really good point in what you shared. This is just going to be better for students if there's more consistency of teachers staying in the classroom because they can afford to.
Patrick and Jeff both, I think it was Jeff, pointed to District of Innovation, which is a policy here in Texas that enabled uncertified teachers, as we were saying earlier, to go into the classroom. And I just want to make this little side note for any of our listeners, especially who might be current DOI candidates, not to fear. The state is not telling districts to kick DOI teachers or candidates to the curb. Rather, there are provisions in place like that. Incentive of $1,000, like maybe you were hired as a District of Innovation teacher and you've, for whatever reason, not finished the requirements, to be fully certified. There's something, a little carrot they're dangling in front of you to like, okay, hurry up and get to that level so that we can continue to develop you from there. And I just want to make that little side note because I know some DOI teachers that are phenomenal. And I would hate for them to like to stoke any fear in them that somehow they're not going to be able to continue to pursue this career. But I do agree with what Jeff and Patrick are saying, which is that it's important for us to get away from that exception, what was intended to be an exception, becoming the rule for continuity, et cetera. So there is some flexibility afforded to districts in shifting their hiring practices so as not to create additional staffing woes. Ultimately, the need for strong teacher preparation is indisputable. And here's what Jeff and Patrick had to say in closing about the long-range implications that come with more robust training for teachers.
Well, and I think, like, broadly speaking, if we're successful at making pathways into teaching more affordable and really high quality in terms of the practice experiences and the skills that we're producing in our most novice educators, I think, like, the outsized impact is incredible, not just on teachers, students, and their families and their immediate communities, but like American democracy writ large. Just last week, we were in DC with a bunch of leaders, including several from across the state of Texas and their recent graduates and aspiring teachers, talking to federal leaders about the like national imperative, particularly at a moment when there's like geopolitical hotspots and economic crises happening upstream, downstream, is like we need strong American leaders to help guide us through these types of like huge challenges. And in order to do that, we have to have strong classroom teachers, right? We don't get great American leaders shaping the future of American democracy and competitiveness absent really strong teachers supporting our students like gain foundational skills, both life skills and academic skills. And so I think it bleeds well beyond just the immediate impact on our schools and teachers. But for the sake of this conversation, I think if implemented well, both in Texas and other communities across the country that are making similar investments in trade-offs in policy, we will see this like revolving door of teachers exiting the profession prior to year three slow down, right? It's gonna like take time. Effective implementation takes time, and oftentimes our policymakers who rely on political windows to retain power like want to see an immediate shift. But if we're committed to seeing these investments through, we will see a system shift where teachers are staying in the classroom because they are beginning their careers on a really strong foundation and understand what it takes to do the job really, really well. And If they're doing that, then the students in front of them don't have to worry about, is it going to be a long-term sub in front, or their families don't have to worry, is my kiddo going to be taught by a long-term sub? But they're actually going to get consistent access to teachers teaching them the core content that they need to be focused on in their K-12 experience, and actually accelerating their own learning outcomes. And so I think we'll see both academic shifts and behavioral shifts among students, and then hopefully broader shifts in the perceptions of education and teaching in particular, as it's currently situated in our country.
You were talking about shifts in perceptions and the ways that we're thinking about education. I think the news about vacancies and uncertified teachers in Texas can unfortunately create a conclusion for people that all we need to do is get more certified teachers into the classroom, which I think misses the point. Certification is the floor, it's not the ceiling. What we really want to be thinking about is how do we make sure that every teacher is well prepared and is like ready to walk into that classroom on day one, equipped with those tools. And I think there's a number of parts of this bill. There's a number of components in this bill that are pointing towards preparation as really being the goal. And so things like making sure that candidates are in practice-based classroom roles. So they really have a lot of face time with both their students and mentor teachers to set them up for success in that first year teaching. We talk about the teaching profession as being, critical for economic prosperity, for creating opportunities for people. And it's, every single person can point towards a teacher that made a huge difference in their life. But we also know that if you don't have those excellent teachers in front of you, it really like takes away opportunity for folks. And it's interesting, the teaching profession is one that should be treated as a profession, similarly to other occupations like medicine and law.
They can't do their jobs, and there's only so much that you can do. And so we can't just put folks into context where they feel bad or they're just going to leave.
Certification is the floor, not the ceiling. I could not agree more with that statement. And I think it's one of the greatest misnomers about the teaching profession for those not in it. And if I'm being honest, sometimes among those who are in it. We've zoomed out and talked at length about how teachers are the greatest resource a school has to offer its students. I know we've talked about that in previous episodes at length. And we've also talked about the ways that a high quality educational experience in schools positively impacts communities at large. But on this last point, I really want to zoom in for a second and ask y'all, when you reflect on your early career, and if let's just say you were entering the profession today, what do you think the difference in training, based on what we've heard from Patrick and Jeff and what we know is kind of coming down the pipeline, what would this kind of training mean for you as a new educator? And maybe what does it mean for you now, so many years in, to know that your future colleagues will be undertaking more rigorous and comprehensive training? And finally, how do you feel about the even bigger notion of classroom leaders serving an important role in American democracy?
As a teacher in the classroom, I want to trust that what's going on in the classroom next to mine is high quality and of best, impact on the kids that are in that room. If I am a student or family member sending my student to a public school in Texas, I want to feel that trust as well. And so having certification be the floor, not the ceiling, and having really robust programs that are going to get great people in the classroom is just going to build that trust. Trust is the key thing. When I go to my doctor, I trust that I'm going to get a great level of care because of all of the programs he or she had to go through in order to get to that point, residency being one of them, right? And when I pay the down payment for a great lawyer, same thing, right? It's like all about trust in our institutions, and that's going to keep people in the public schools and also help us continue to keep these programs going in perpetuity, which is the bedrock for democracy.
Oh, I so wish that I had gone through one of these high quality pathway programs. A residency program would have been awesome. I think that would have saved me about 5 years of endless anxiety and stress and long hours of prep. It would have been a game changer for me for sure. And Knowing that future teachers, future colleagues will have gone through this kind of comprehensive training is great. I think that this is all gravy. It's all good. One thing that I think it was Jeff who talked about long-term subs in the classroom. Oh man, I remember like 3 years of my son's elementary school education was with these long-term subs, and there's not a whole lot of learning going on in those classrooms. So yeah, it's absolutely about trust. And I love that analogy with going to the doctor. I think it's spot on.
Yeah, I think there's an angle here too that we haven't really fully addressed, which is on the professional standpoint from the workforce perspective. Like I, not only as a parent would I feel more confident about the quality of education my child would be receiving, but as a professional, I'm going to feel more confident in my own performance and growth opportunity when I'm surrounded by colleagues that are really top notch, right? Like they're good at what they do. And there have been, unfortunately, a lot of situations where, it's sort of the same vibe as group work and a project where somebody's pulling all the weight and other people are kind of skirting by. And that's not to say anything negative about teachers who, I want to believe everybody's there doing the best that they can. And the whole conversation that we're having today with you guys and that we had with Patrick and Jeff was about really fostering a good baseline foundation of where everybody sort of meets on that professional level. So I think that's going to be a game changer for people on the professional side of it, because we go into teaching because we're lifelong learners, right? And so there's this ever evolving dynamic that the training for people entering at a later time needs to also be flexible to and relevant. So on that note, a special thanks to Jeff and Patrick from Deans for Impact for lending their expertise to today's conversation. One thing they both spoke to that didn't really make it into the final cut here is just how vital the advocacy engine, as they called it in Texas, has been to transforming this policy that aligns with practice. Though we ran out of time to include their comments on that specifically, I wanted to be sure to mention it. Let that serve as encouragement when things feel too big to tackle at times, and as affirmation that our voices, your voices, really do have an impact on the outcomes that affect us all. That's precisely why the three of us are doing this, and it's why we invite you to be part of the conversation. Whatever your role or proximity to Education Matters in Texas, we hope to hear from you. You can find us on Instagram at All Things Education Podcast, where you can follow, like, and share updates from the show. And of course, you can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to subscribe or follow the show to ensure that you never miss an episode, and share your favorites with anyone you think might benefit from listening. Your support means a great deal to all of us. Lance, Matt, you both mean a great deal to me. Thanks for being here.
Ditto.
Until next time, love you, bye.
Thank you for listening to All Things Education.
Be sure to leave us a review and share the show with everyone you know.
And if you liked what you heard, stay tuned for more compelling conversations with Natalie, Matthew, and Lance.
Until next time, Texas.